In the Roman Empire, there was a saying, do ut des. It's very similar to quid pro quo. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. You do good to me, I'll do good to you. A favor for a favor. But do ut des has a darker side to it, because it has much more of a divine component to it and how it was used in the Roman Empire. It has a darker side to it as well. That if you do evil to me, I will inflict evil upon you. It's the law of vengeance. It's the law of vengeance, which was born soon after the fall. Sin, with the fall, it was like a seed planted. What had been the tree of life becomes the tree of death. And that tree grows and its roots spread and they embed themselves into the whole ground. And so with the sin of Adam, out of his pride and disobedience with Eve, by the next generation, with Cain and Abel, Cain kills his brother out of jealousy and hatred. And then if you go down, as Genesis goes, seven generations from the original sin, we hear a descendant of Cain whose name is Lamech. And Lamech, remember how important numbers are in the Bible. And even in Genesis 7, what happened in 7? Just earlier in Genesis, that was the whole of creation. The perfect number. That in 7, something is fully complete. By the time you get down to the seventh generation of sin, there's in a sense this completeness to sin. That there's the fullness of sin and it's become embedded and interwoven into everything. Because Adam, when he sinned, what did he and Eve do? Right away. They went and they hid from God. Because something in their conscience knew that what they had done was wrong. Cain, when he killed his brother Abel, what did he do? He hid the body. The Lord asked Cain, where is your brother? Am I my brother's keeper? He lied to the Lord, but something in his conscience knew he had to hide his brother's body from the Lord. He knew what he had did was wrong. Lamech, he killed a man for merely hitting him. And what does he do? Is he brags about it. He glorifies it. He comes to his two wives. He's also the one, as sin keeps spreading, who introduced polygamy through his lust. He comes and he brags to his two wives. This man looked at me wrong. He hit me and I killed him. If Cain is avenged sevenfold, then Lamech is avenged 77-fold. These are the words of Lamech, referring to himself in this weird way too. If you remember, Adam, God showed him mercy. In his nakedness, he clothed him and Eve. God showed mercy to Cain as well. Because Cain, after he was discovered by God, said, now I am done, for others will kill me. And the Lord, to protect Cain, put the mark on him, saying that if anyone kills you, vengeance will be mine sevenfold. To protect Cain, it was an act of mercy. But with Lamech, there is no remorse at all. This evil has become complete and full. But not just that, he says, this vengeance, which is only God's and only God's to give or to entrust to others, Lamech now claims it as his own, that my vengeance will be 77-fold. He's claiming a vengeance which is like God's. It is unlimited. It is boundless. You can see how wicked humanity had become, that there was not even a speck of remorse in his wrath and anger and murder and vengeance, but instead it's celebrated and glorified. This is how wicked humanity had become. So you can see why very soon after this, God had to hit the reset button. With the flood of Noah, humanity had become so wicked. And he hit the reset button, and humanity was washed clean by the water, as it was in the flood, and as we're washed clean through the waters of baptism. Lamech, though, feels justified in his wrath, completely justified. And he's blinded and imprisoned by it. He claims vengeance as his own, and his vengeance is unlimited and unbounded and completely justified. Sirach, in the first reading, says that wrath and anger are hateful things, yet the sinner hugs them tightly. He clings to them. C.S. Lewis, in his book, The Great Divorce, which speaks of the great divorce between heaven and hell, there's a character in it. There's this man who's sort of this ghost-like figure, and he's in this purgatory-like state, and he has this red lizard which is upon him, and it has its tail sort of wrapped around the man, and the red lizard is whispering in the man's ear, and it causes him to do all sorts of stuff. And there's an angel that comes up to him, and he says, "May I kill it?" This lizard that was attached to him like a salamander with a sticky feet and stuff. It's attached to him, and this man, he doesn't really like it, but he's not willing to let go of it. He said, "Oh, does it have to be like so sudden?" He's like, "I have him mostly under control. Yeah, he causes me to do things I don't like every night, but I have him under control." Sin, as God said to Cain, lurks at your door and it desires you. Sin attaches itself to us. But the problem with this man is he is also clinging and holding on to sin. He doesn't like it, but he does not want to let it go. And the angel says, "May I kill it?" He doesn't force, because this man has to give him the permission for it. Eventually he does, and this man, he's freed and he's transformed as well. Peter asks Jesus, "How often must I forgive?" Peter, who's gotten it wrong and screwed up so much, he comes, he says, "Must I forgive 7 times? Totally, completely." And Jesus reaches back and he quotes Lamech, "No, you're not just to forgive 7 times, you're to forgive 77 times. The forgiveness that you're to give is godlike." Jesus is saying here that the forgiveness that he comes to bring is not one in which it's just for you or for others. The forgiveness Jesus comes to bring reaches all the way back to Adam and to Cain and to Lamech, all the way into the depth of the human heart. That this is the forgiveness. Sin is so interwoven and embedded in everything in this world. Its roots are everywhere, in the world and in our heart. And Jesus came to forgive the entirety of it, all of it, in total. How? Through the cross, which the cross is the power of forgiveness. This is how he forgives all of it. And this power of forgiveness, as you notice, there's still sin in the world and there's still sin in your heart and my heart. Its roots are still there. But this power of forgiveness of the cross is what God gives to us, his body, the church. That the body of Christ, that he has defeated sin and death, but we still cling on to it as it clings on to us, that we might let go of it and cling on to him and cling to the cross alone. And he gives humanity this power through the power of forgiveness. That we receive that, and that that forgiveness is something that we give as he does as well. And it's a power that's unlimited and boundless. It's godlike. There's nothing, nothing, nothing in our fallen human nature that has the power to forgive. We're completely impotent to forgive. In our fallen state, yes, we have free will, but instead it's twisted toward evil. It's only because forgiveness is this divine thing. It's only through the power of God's forgiveness and us receiving that power that we're able to forgive fully from the heart, entirely, in this way in which it's unbounded. And that's the only thing that unbounds us from our sin. To become unbounded from it, where sin is undone. To emphasize this point, Jesus adds the parable. It's a powerful one of the wicked servant. The wicked servant is meant to represent us, at least in the first part. That we're born into a debt that we cannot pay. Our natural state that we're born into in this fallen world is one in which we are separated from God. We're born imprisoned and blinded. That's our natural fallen state. We owe a debt that we can never, ever pay. But yet God, from the cross, has forgiven the debt entirely, in total. And what he asks of us, his disciples and his church, is to do the same, that we might receive that forgiveness and give the unlimited forgiveness we have given for a debt that can never be paid to others who have sinned against us in much less ways, as awful and as horrible as some of it might have been. And that the only way we understand this forgiveness is that it doesn't remain something external. This is the whole thing. If that forgiveness remains something external to me, yeah, that happened. Yeah, Jesus forgave all my sins, but it's something external. I'll never really understand it. I'll never really get it. It's only when it becomes internalized, when I become united with that forgiveness in Jesus on the cross. And how does that happen? When the forgiveness that I've received, that in order for it to take root truly in me, is I have to give that. And the only way I can give that is if I reach and receive the forgiveness of Jesus on the cross, that it becomes something internal, that I become united with him. And that I cannot, this remember coming off just last week, Jesus talking, if your brother sins against you, go directly to him, all this sort of stuff. That becoming and truly being a part of his body, the church, necessitates this forgiveness because we are the body of Jesus Christ and we are so united to him, we must be, that his forgiveness that is still in this world is that which frees us from clinging on to sin and holding on to him. It has to become something internalized. Otherwise, we'll never understand it. We'll be like the servant, not having any idea of what he's received. You know, of all the seven deadly sins, it's our anger and our wrath that we usually feel most justified in. You know, I'm just speaking for myself, but it's our anger and our wrath that I can really feel justified in it. I don't like it. I don't really like it. But there are times in which I really feel justified in it. That it remains on me like this lizard, kind of with its tail wrapped around me, around my neck and around my back, whispering in my ear. I don't like it, but I'm not really willing to let go of it either. I feel justified in it. But I'm only justified, as St. Paul reminded again and again and again and again and again and again and again. I'm only justified by the cross. I'm only justified by forgiveness. And unless I forgive my brother from my heart, at the heart of the Lord's Prayer is that haunting conditional, that conditional phrase that we say to our Father. Forgive us our trespasses only insofar as we forgive those who trespass against us. We're called to cling and to hug to the cross, not our vengeance and wrath, because it's only through the cross that we're able to receive God's forgiveness, that we're justified, and that we're able to give that forgiveness to others from the heart.